The following podcast is brought to you by Newfie EVP, Talking with the Dead in Newfoundland. Jump on Amazon.ca today and get your free sample of the best-selling ebook in Unexplained Mysteries.
It's the odd to Newfoundland. Ghostly greetings from your host, Jonathan. Mysteries, ghosts, monsters, and lore. East Coast Esoterica and so much more. If it's up to you, friend, it's on the up to Newfoundland.
Ghostly greetings from the oldest city in North America. I'm your host, Jonathan Mallard, bringing you the best in East Coast esoterica. You, my friends, have stumbled upon the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast for the month of March. I do have some thank yous I got to throw out tonight. Okay, this is very, very important. I got to throw them out there because there's a lot of people who helped make this podcast happen today and just improve the quality of it so much. First off, I got to thank my friend Mike Barrington for the voiceovers he provided for the show. You're going to hear him twice tonight as he gives me a little commercial for my book, Newfie EVP, Talking with the Dead in Newfoundland. As well, he also does the small little spot for Stella Circle, a charity I've decided to start supporting. Big thank you to Andros Guitar for the new theme of the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. Man, oh man, I think it really does capture the spirit of what I'm trying to do. We're trying to be lighthearted, but at the same time have a spooky and fun time. So he did great. Also, big thank you to Jim Maryland for some of the troubleshooting issues I've had over the last few months. Jim has helped me tremendously. Don't forget to catch Jim every Tuesday night at 9 p.m. at KGRARadio.com. Remember, he's worth every penny. And there you have it. Thanks, guys, for all your help. Before I dig in, we've got to pay homage to one of my inspirations. I'll say absolutely nothing, and I want you guys to enjoy this minute of not silence in memory of the legend, Leonard Nimoy.
This series presents information based in part on theory and conjecture. The producer's purpose is to suggest some possible explanations, but not necessarily the only ones, to the mysteries we will examine.
The sound can only be described as otherworldly, but the source is as commonplace as the ground we walk on, the air we breathe. The sound comes from plants, through sensitive electronic devices which translate fluctuations of energy. Some call it a voice. Whatever it is, it raises the astonishing possibility that plants can communicate.
And there you have it. You know, so many people are fans of Leonard Nimoy because of his contributions in the Star Trek franchise. Me, I could care less about Spock. When I think of Leonard Nimoy, I think of the host of the iconic TV show about the paranormal, In Search Of. Leonard Nimoy, may he rest in peace, and thank you for your contribution to my childhood and making me the host I am today. Live long and prosper indeed, my friend, to Mr. Leonard Nimoy. Now, speaking of dying, you could probably hear my voice that I'm not 100%. Yes, I have to admit to you guys that I have fallen ill. It's true. I am suffering from the dreaded... man cold. Yeah, I am so not 100%. But you know what? I think it's important that I try to get my podcast out in the beginning of the month, so I was not going to wait another week. I struggled and I fought myself into this. And you know what the really funny thing is? Tonight I have one of my, just another icon, we'll say, another man who's really done a lot for my vision of the paranormal. Mr. David Roundtree is on my show tonight, and I actually recorded at the beginning of the month with David and released today. So I actually recorded him earlier in February. And guess what? He was also suffering from... the dreaded man cold. You know what? I'm just going to play this little quick commercial to get everyone a chance to see how me and David felt during this podcast so you can truly appreciate the drama that went on behind the scenes.
Pam, can you call my mom?
All jokes aside, though, it's a great interview, and a little later in the show, we will have the mad scientist of the paranormal joining me, Mr. David Roundtree. We've tipped our hat to Leonard Nimoy, and we've tipped our hat to the man who's very well known for wearing a cowboy hat, Mr. David Roundtree. But now we got to tip our hats back and just scratch our head, because, yes, it is time for this month's paranormal news. Ladies and gentlemen, the military has denied it. Manitoba has become a UFO epicenter just about overnight, and there's nothing but rumors about an apparent crash. Multiple witnesses report a light in the sky were followed by an unusually high military presence. Unfortunately, after that, people were copying and pasting pictures of UFOs all over Facebook, claiming that this was what they were capturing. But in reality, nothing could be farther from the truth. Interest in the event was limited to begin with, but quickly gained momentum after photographs were posted online showing a large contingent of military vehicles arriving in the area. The unusual scene soon prompted speculation that the soldiers were there to investigate the object that had been sighted earlier. As it turned out, however, the whole operation had been nothing more than a military training exercise. Now, Colonel Paul Davies said, "There's no aliens, just my friends in the Air Force who are out there helping us out on this exercise. I have the commander of that Air Force contingent sitting right beside me, and, you know, he assures us that it was not a UFO, but that was him. No UFOs involved. The exercise involved more than 150 military personnel who were being trained what to do in the event of a plane crash and to help hunt for survivors in the harsh conditions of the Arctic." So, you know what? There you go. The military are claiming this is what happened. Now, I'm sorry, but I've got to call bull on one thing. If you have 150 military men and women entering an area, okay, even if it is secluded like this reserve, does not the public have a right to know? Doesn't the public have a right to know what's going on? I know here in St. John's, Newfoundland, whenever, say, a company needs to dynamite a rock to build a road or anything like that, they actually contact the general public and let them know what's going on. Now, thanks to Facebook, we've got all these so-called, all of a sudden, they're MUFON experts, we'll say. MUFBook. There you go. You guys can quote me on that. We have the MUFON Facebook just coming to life here and people basically saying, "Hey, we know what this is. It was a UFO." But you know what? Here's the reality of it is, it was absolutely nothing that happened in Manitoba, guys. Okay? My opinion, the military dropped the ball, someone should have been informed, there should have been warnings put out to the public, and that would have been that. Okay? Let's move on. Now, of course, if you're in Manitoba, you're looking up to the heavens. Sometimes you haven't got to look very far to find a heaven. Because there's a doctor right now who recalls visiting heaven during a near-death experience. A doctor who almost drowned remembers interacting with spirits and being warned about her son's death. 16 years ago, orthopedic spinal surgeon Dr. Mary Neal was involved in a kayaking accident that almost took her life. But it's what she experienced while doctors battled to save her that would remain the most memorable and profound part of her ordeal. Her near-death experience began when she awoke to find herself walking towards a large dome structure, situated in a landscape of intense beauty and serenity. Two spirits greeted her outside and expressed how happy that they were there and that she had arrived finally. They had physical forms, she said. They had heads, arms, legs, and were wearing sort of robes. The spirits went on to explain that it was not yet her time and that she had to go back. They also told her something that would haunt her for years to come, that her oldest son would die soon in the near future. They didn't tell me the date or the time, but it was very clear that that would be happening, she said. Dr. Neelan went on to take full recovery. However, the warning she had received during her experience came to pass 10 years later when her son was killed in an automobile accident. "I don't pretend to have all the answers," she said. "My primary mandate was to return and to share my story because my story is comforting and reassuring and inspires other people to really look at their own lives and find God working in their own lives." There you have it. A medical doctor who, shall we say, has one foot in the grave and one foot firmly on the book of science. You know, I believe in a world that constantly contradicts itself all the time. If you look at particle physics, okay, you're going to see that there's someone else in the driver's seat. Look up double slit experiment. Look up spooky action at a distance. Look up all these theories actually spend some time researching, and you're going to see that science needs spirituality just as much as spirituality needs science, okay? It's when you have extremes in both situations that you usually deal with people who are crazy or going absolutely nowhere. Personally, I like to think that there's a God. I really do. Do I think he has everything under his thumb and is controlling absolutely everything around you? Absolutely not. There you go. Now, let's talk about something that's a little bit more towards the heavens. Let's go even farther up. You need some good news after hearing about poor Leonard Nimoy, I'm sure. Well, you know what? You haven't got to look very far. Well, maybe you do have to look very far to find something kind of fun and jovial, because the Hubble Space Telescope has captured a smiley face in space. The Hubble Space Telescope has managed to photograph a rather jovial-looking galaxy cluster. The impressive image, which shows a distant group of galaxies, bears an uncanny resemblance to the smiling human face. Each of the points on the face include the two bright orange eyes and its white button nose are individual galaxies, while its smiling expression and overall circular shape are the result of strong gravitational lensing, a phenomenon in which the light behind the cluster is magnified and distorted by its powerful gravitational pull. In this special case of gravitational lensing, a ring, known as an Einstein ring, is produced from this bending of light. A consequence of the exact and symmetrical alignment of the source, lens and observer, and resulting in the ring-like structure we see here, NASA wrote on their website. So basically, this is actually a natural phenomenon, but man, oh man, you guys got to jump online and check this out because, well, what can I say? We can all use a little laugh and chuckle this week. It's been a rough one for a lot of people out there, I'm sure. There's smiley faces in the stars. You know, we got to strong arm ourselves sometimes to get up out of bed. And when you think about strong, you want to think about the strongest biological material known to man. Now, up until a little while ago, I was pretty much convinced that it was certain types of spider silk, which I'm about to read now. But apparently, limpet teeth. Limpets are just, literally, they look like little clams. Limpet teeth are the strongest biological material known to exist anywhere in the world. When it comes to strong materials in the animal kingdom, spider silk is usually the first thing that springs to mind. But now scientists have identified something even stronger, and it comes from one of the most unlikeliest of creatures imaginable. The common limpet, an aquatic snail that clings on the rocks and can be found along shorelines all over the world, possesses teeth so strong that researchers had to resort to using a diamond saw in order to cut into them. Their sheer strength, which is comparable to that of some of the strongest man-made materials, could prove invaluable in the construction of cars, boats, planes, and even false teeth. You hear that, Hannibal Lecter? Farmer beans. The strength of limpet teeth is, on average, 4.9 GPA. That is like trying to break a piece of spaghetti with 3,000 bags of sugar, said study leader Professor Ezit Barber. Limpet tooth strength is comparable to the fibers used in bulletproof vests and the carbon fibers commonly found and used in composites for aerospace structures and Formula One cars. In other words, this stuff is strong, very, very strong, and it comes from a natural source. You know, Then go out and buy me a new car made of limpet teeth. At least then if I get an accident, I have no worry about my little darling Faith. And there you have it, folks. From Leonard Nimoy passing away to a supposed UFO crash in Manitoba. Limpets with incredibly powerful teeth. Smiley faces in the sky. All these stories have been odd to Newfoundland.
The Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal podcast does not accept donations. In lieu of this, the Stella Burry Foundation is a registered charity established in 2005 to secure financial support for the work of Stella's Circle. Learn more and please give generously at stellaburry.ca. And now, back to the show.
Okay, welcome back on the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal podcast. I am joined by a member of the Audio Engineering Society, the American Association for the Advancement of Science, the Rhine Research Center, and co-director of New Jersey Paranormal Resource Group. He's the founder, chief science advisor, and executive director of Spirit Lab, which is in good old New Jersey. And if that wasn't enough to make your head spin, he's an author, he's a physicist, he's a shaman, and technical consultant for Destination America's Ghost Stalkers TV show. Ladies and gentlemen, it is my pleasure to bring to you the mad scientist of the paranormal himself, Mr. David Rowntree. How are you tonight, sir?
I'm doing good, man. Fighting off this cold that I've had all week, but I'm doing good.
Yeah, I've been fighting it too. And let me tell you, you know, sometimes, you know, maybe we should, you know, go the way of the pharmaceutical. Stop researching. Stop diving into all the scientific tests on paranormal and just find a cure for the common cold.
Exactly. We're not telling. We can land a man on the moon. We can land a man on the moon, but we can't cure the sniffles, man.
Dave, it's absolutely an honor to have you on my show, man. I really appreciate this. You know, I get to talk to somebody tonight and hopefully make a new friend in the field. I definitely need a few more. Newfoundland's a pretty sparsely populated place. So welcome to the easternmost point in North America today. And as everyone knows, Mr. Dave Rowntree, science and spiritual beliefs seem to be at odds with each other most of the time. But I believe what makes you very special, Dave, is the fact that you know both of these worlds as a physicist and a shaman. Can you tell us a little bit about living in both of these worlds at the same time and how they make you the researcher you are today?
You know, it's funny because when I began in the field, it was a conflict for me because I was constantly trying to disprove things that I knew from experience and felt. And, you know, trying to debunk the things that I knew were true. Because the challenge was proving the things that you feel. And that's always the case. But I've kind of worked up a solution to that in the fact that I have come up with what I believe to be a third state of reality. You know, science is struggling with materialism. You know, everything's materialism, and then you have quantum mechanics. But they can't unite the two with a grand theory of everything. So I have theorized that there is a third state of reality called a non-material reality. And that is the actual interface point between those two sciences. So that connects the two, that unifies the two fields of physics. So when I had my mindset turned around that way, I was able to kind of, you know, coincide and reconcile both sides of it, and now they work together in harmony. And it was a personal journey, and maybe one day I'll write a book about that, you know, when I get tired of everything else.
But David, in my opinion, you've already written two kind of about that journey, haven't you?
Yeah.
Definitely. You know, I live in that world myself, you know, constantly having to kind of second guess your own results, so to speak. But at the same time, also just being so full of hope. And I think it's refreshing to have somebody who isn't firmly on one side. I think it's refreshing to have somebody who's willing to fight for both. I think that's awesome, man. Now, everybody these days has a ghost story, but it wasn't always this way, eh? A lot of people were more secretive about it. You know, Demon Street yeah. USA is your new book. You got it out. It's a book you authored about a time when things were not as mainstream as they are now in the realm of paranormal investigation. It wasn't on TV every 5 minutes, so to speak. Can you give us a little background without giving us the entire story of Demon Street USA, of course, about what went on during this time, man? Because this time is really important. Really important in your story, so let's hear it.
Yeah, back in 1985, the co-author, good friend of mine, Robbie Lunt, he came to me because he had a friend that was having issues in their house. And he didn't know who to go to because back in 1985, let's face it, you didn't talk about this stuff. There wasn't a demonologist on every street corner. You couldn't look up in the phone book for a paranormal group. That stuff just didn't exist. And you didn't talk about it because in Florida, where we live, they had this thing called the Baker Act, and anyone could, like, put you in an institution for 72 hours with no rhyme or reason to evaluate you if they thought you were crazy. So it was a very closed circle of individuals that dealt with this sort of stuff back then. And he came to me for some help with it, and we thought it was just a haunted house, you know. We thought we were going to go over and have some laughs and, you know, deal with some type of haunted house situation. And it turned out that it was much more sinister than that. And it was affecting this woman's life. It affected her emotionally and physically. She was a total wreck, and we ended up getting involved in it. And it's a rocket ride, you know, the whole story starts out. What's interesting is that the publisher made us cut 10,000 words from the manuscript.
Oh, that's and a lot. That's an incredible amount to get cut. Holy crap.
Yeah, what we had done was we had sort of given the reader a break in between the intense scenes in the book to kind of reflect on stuff, and we removed all of that. So it starts out with a bang, and it continues to explode all the way through to the very end. And it's basically the story of us dealing with this, for lack of a better term, a demonic manifestation in a home that wasn't limited to the home or the property. It was able to hound us all over the area. I mean, we had issues with it everywhere we went in that region of Florida.
That's really interesting. That's really interesting because you're not just dealing with one property. You're dealing with something that actually seemed to almost follow you around. Is that what you mean?
Well, it literally targeted us. But wow. Once we started dealing with it, it targeted us. And it really targeted Robbie, my co-author. And he had numerous run-ins with this thing to the point where he was, you know, if we didn't have, I'll put it to you this way, if we didn't maintain our sense of humor through the whole thing, we would have been sniveling ingrates by the time we got done with it. Because the only thing that really survived, you know, allowed us to survive the whole thing was we were able to step back and laugh at it.
That's interesting, too, you know, because I've experienced true fear before, and I'm telling you, you do one of two things. You either just let out a nervous giggle, or you go completely free. You freeze completely solid, so.
Oh, right, or you have to wash your drawers out.
That can happen as well, too. And I guarantee everyone who's listening right now, you pick up a copy of Demon Street USA on Amazon right now, and you may as well get a new pair of underwear while you're there. Maybe you should sell them both. Maybe you can sell them both together as like a package. That'd be a cool idea.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, yeah, we tell people to read it in a dimly lit room late at night. That's the best effect.
You see people sitting on the can playing Candy Crush. Why not read Demon Street while you're there? Save yourself a pair of drawers.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, maybe we'll make an app, you know? Turn it into a game.
Demon Chat USA. I can already see it now. It's going to be awesome. Okay, so what sticks out during that incredibly important time on your spiritual journey? Like, you know, I just think of the darkness and you guys laughing it off and stuff like that, but was there a point where it was kind of like, hey, you know, something really important is going on here. We're going to take it from this experience. But what did you learn? What's probably the most important thing you learned during that time?
You know, I was dealing with something that I didn't really believe existed. And for me, it was like, I mean, there's a telling moment in the book where one of the people that was working with us was so afraid because of an encounter that he had that he left. He totally said, I can't deal with this anymore, and he was gone. And we brought a young lady in who was kind of like this little, like, nature witch kind of person. And she was very full of herself and thought she was just all this. And she was like, well, she said, how many times have you ever dealt with this, you know? And I said, never. And that's when it was a sobering moment, because we were dealing with something we had no idea how to deal with. So a lot of the story is in that journey on learning how to deal with it. And I learned a great deal. I learned a great deal about myself. I learned a great deal about Robbie, and I learned a great deal about the individuals helping me. But I also learned a great deal about life in general and how things that we take for granted can be completely manipulated and turned against us by an insidious entity, you know, and an energy force that we can't reckon with directly by normal means.
Makes me kind of want to get my own witch. Hey, listen, if Hans Holzer had one, I believe I'm correct when I say that he did employ a witch of sorts.
Oh, yeah. Sybil Leek.
Yeah, come to think of
Sybil it. Sybil Leek.
Gee, you know what? I have not got enough information on that guy. I need to get more. I got one book. Is there any more about him, I wonder?
Oh, there's a bunch out there. And then Sybil Leek actually wrote a book about her experiences working with him.
Now, see, that'd be an interesting interview.
But he worked with several mediums doing his research. And that was really his pioneering work in the field, was working with mediums as a tool to investigate these manifestations.
Kind of gives him a step
above.
He sort
of pioneered that whole thing.
Yeah, it kind of gives him a step above just your basic walk in with a pen and paper. And, you know, much like Mr. Holzer back when he was active, you know, I'm sure your equipment was different back then as well. Here's an interesting one, because when I think of Dave Rountree, I think of Mr. Gadgets, all the stuff around all the crazy scientific instrumentation.
That's what they call me, you know. They call me Inspector Gadget.
Inspector Gadget. Well, Inspector Gadget, is there one piece of equipment you just wish you could have had during that demonic haunting? that you incorporate in your research today? Is there one thing you wish you had had with you?
You know, it's funny because what I wished I would have been able to do was to go over that property with the EMF quadrilator, which is like what they call the wormhole detector on TV. I would have loved to have tried to map out the portals on that property because I believe there were several different areas on that property that were allowing things to come and go. And I would have loved to have documented data-wise that whole piece of property. Of course, the technology I use today wasn't available back then. So, you know, everything that I do today is all digital signal processing stuff. And, you know, that stuff was unheard of back then. I mean, we didn't even have a cassette tape recorder. I mean, I think 1985, we had our first handheld Sony cassette recorder. Prior to that, we'd been using a TIAC A4010S reel-to-reel, which is certainly not portable.
I was just going to say, wasn't that thing huge? Oh, my God.
Yeah, it was like you carried it around with a wheelbarrow, you know? but things were not miniaturized. We didn't have meters. We didn't have all these gadgets that they have out here today and blinky lights and stuff. You know, we had basic tools. You know, I had my first EMF monitoring device was a converted Army minesweeper, you know, for like looking for enemy mines. So it was just very crude back in those days.
And you know, I always think back then, you know, oh my, there are so many different stories that come from, oh my God, even hundreds of years ago, just stories that just fly out at us. And I think back to even recent history, because believe it or not, 85 is recent history, Dave. It might not feel like it today, but it is recent history. And just the advances we've made in technology.
Is back then, too, you know, like my very close friend was Dr. William Roll, who pretty much was the expert on poltergeist activity. And Dr. Roll actually was the first person to read my first paranormal book, which was Paranormal Technology. He was the first person to read it.
Cool.
And he was blown away by it. And that was probably the biggest compliment I could have ever gotten from anyone because he was my mentor. And Dr. Roll, he said, David, he said, this is an incredible book. I wish I understood it. And that was like, wow. You know?
That's like,
he was not big in technology. You know, he was not a big technologist. He was big on subjective science. I mean, he was a psychologist to start with, and then he was a parapsychologist. So he was into the one-on-one, the testimony, the personal experience aspect of it. But he was great at that. But he wasn't good at the technology. It wasn't his forte. So when he read about it, he was fascinated with the book because he understood parts of it, but he didn't understand the science behind it. You know, when I started talking about light, breaking light down into different wave functions and stuff, that was a little beyond him, but he understood the concept of needing to quantify that and needing to measure those things. And he was excited about the book. And then he passed away, like, shortly after the book came out. And it was a sad time for me when that happened, but it was a bittersweet time in my life when he read that book and told me that. And he read the manuscript. The manuscript is a Word document, and he literally printed it out and read it, and then gave me feedback on it. It was incredible.
Awesome. And, you know, a good mentor. You know, that's something I wish there was more of. Now, I'm pretty isolated in Newfoundland, and I can honestly tell you that there's just no one I can really even talk to about this that I know of in Newfoundland right now who is as serious as I am about what I do. Most people are out trying to be, well, ghost hunters. The show. Me, I'm more about, you know, actually testing different theories or whatnot and some ideas that I've had myself. You know, I believe that if there was more mentors in Newfoundland, I probably would have had a different start at this. But you know what? I think that's one of the reasons why I do these podcasts. Because I got some questions about EVPs we're going to talk about off-air sometime. And I'm telling you, there's a lot of stuff that you say that coincide with some of the things that I've discovered as well. So it's really interesting. You know, the wormhole theory is something we got to talk about, man. And, you know, we could talk at length, really, about some of the things you discovered and pulled data about during your many years in the field. But one thing that sticks out to me about your research is that wormhole theory. You know, you've talked about it many times before on air with other people, but I was just wondering, can you give us like maybe a brief explanation as to what this is to people? And what are some of those telltale signs or clues that the paranormal phenomenon might be leaving that supports that theory?
Yeah, it started when I discovered what an EVP was. And when I started, EVP was called a rod of a voice. Mm-hmm. They didn't have the term EVP back then. But I've been working with EVP since I started in the field. And once I determined that it wasn't sound, which was one of the first experiments I did, and what we did was is we took a bell jar and we suspended a dynamic microphone in the bell jar. And we took it to a location that was active, and we were still able to record a voice through that microphone when the microphone was in a vacuum.
I was just going to say, isn't a bell jar used for a vacuum? I'm sorry, I'm all science geeky now. Isn't a bell jar used for a vacuum? That's exactly what I was about to ask before.
Yeah, I was in the Air Force.
Oh, cool, man. See, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and I started out in the field right when I got out of the Air Force in 1976.
Cool, man.
And so I had decided that I didn't think it was sound. I believed that EVP was created by an electromagnetic field in the voice spectrum.
Ah.
And I couldn't prove it back in 1976, but I could prove it wasn't sound. And I was able to prove it wasn't sound. And it wasn't until like 2000 that I had the technology, the year 2000, that I had the technology and the software capability to go to start working on proving that it was EMF. And once that I did that and I proved that it was EMF, then it was like, where is it coming from? And that's when I discovered that it was emerging into the environment from outside of the environment, meaning it was a local phenomena with a non-local source. And that was a huge discovery. So then I had to start thinking about what's going on where this stuff is emerging. And we started taking these measurements of the environment when EVP started happening. And we started finding out that a very small part of the environment, a very localized area, changes dramatically. And I started looking in science for an explanation for this. And the only thing that even came close was an Einstein-Rosen bridge or a wormhole. And I thought to myself, wow, if I can prove the existence of a wormhole, that would be huge in physics, because right now it's a theoretical construct. It's part of the theory of relativity, and it's part of the mathematical solution for relativity, but no one's actually observed one or measured one. And I thought, wow, if I could actually capture physical evidence of wormhole formation, that would be a huge discovery in physics. Forget what it does for the paranormal. I mean, it will totally change the way we look at physics and how we can utilize that. Can you imagine mastering wormhole technology?
Oh, my God.
You know, step into a phone booth in New York City and stepping out of it a second later in London.
Man, you know, we'd never, ever have to worry about where the remote is, because we wouldn't need it anymore. I just mean, reach over to the TV no matter where we are.
Imagine opening a wormhole up and having an unlimited, endless supply of energy to run the planet off of. It's like green energy. You know, so, I mean, the things, it would rewrite the total future of mankind if we had some kind of, if we were able to crack that technology. But anyway, the concept had to be that it, in science, there's only two things that would create the conditions that I was observing and measuring, and that was a localized bending of time-space caused by some type of gravity well or external force, which we had no evidence of that. Or it had to be some type of Einstein-Rosen bridge or wormhole formation, which we did have evidence leading us to believe that may be the case.
So basically what you were looking for was not so much as the paranormal phenomena, but from the little pinhole, we'll say, from whence this phenomenon is coming from. It must be coming from somewhere. You know,
we were looking for the conduit, because the conduit, what we were doing is, instead of studying the phenomena, which people have been doing for years and have come up with no conclusions, we started looking at the interface, where the phenomena was emerging from. And that's when we started making these discoveries. So once we've determined that we had emerging information, that was huge. Then it was, you know, we have to speculate as to where that's coming from, because we have no idea where it's coming from. But we know it's coming from outside of our universe. So then it leads you to, you have to figure out, well, is there a multiverse? Are there multiple universes? And now there's more and more evidence suggesting that there are. We've got bruising on the cosmic microwave background that's from the outside, meaning something bumped into our universe. So I came up with this multiverse theory, where the multiverse is like a stack of red Solo cups. And our universe is like a cup that's right about in the middle of the stack. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the stack, you'll notice that there are several cups above the stack, or above the cup we're in, and several cups below the cup we're in that are overlapping the cups adjacent to us and actually are occupying the same physical space as our cup, but they're separated by those thin walls of the cup.
I hate the name. I hate the name drop because, but I just got to say this because, you know, I have read and have just loved the book, especially Mr. Fusco's ability to explain it to the layman such as me, because I'm about as lay as a man can get. he put out a wonderful book called Behind the Cosmic Veil many moons ago, and he does talk at length about a non-local causality. And, you know, it's interesting that you mentioned that those cups, because it reminds me of some of the examples he talked about in his book. I just had to throw his name in there because he's awesome. But anyways, oh, yeah, continue on. Sorry, go on.
Absolutely. But these cups are occupying essentially the same spatial location in space, but they're not in the same realm with each other. They're isolated from each other by the air between them. And by that thin plastic wall, or what I call a holographic boundary. And what happens is that wormholes form between these cups. And when it does, energy will go from one cup to the other. I am sure in our universe, we have these same conduits connecting other universes, and energy is flowing out of our universe into that universe. Well, if you think about this, it would be a common sense explanation for the expanding universe, because we're still taking energy in from all these other places. Mm-hmm. So our universe is still expanding because it's still getting energy pulled in. And then we've got spots where we're feeding other universes from our universe, and energy is flowing from our universe into that universe. So if you take the multiverse as a single entity, then there's no violation of the laws of thermodynamics, where, you know, and energy can be neither created nor destroyed, and you know, energy conservation takes place because the energy is merely passing from one universe to the next, to the next, to the next, and it's part of a single multiverse construct. So that's kind of deep and everything, but what it really means is this stuff is coming from an alternate reality that's very close to our own, but it's separated from our own because it has a different resonant frequency than ours does.
Mm.
It's vibrating at a different level than we're vibrating at.
And that's what you're looking for.
Yeah.
Those vibrations.
And I postulate that the good stuff, or the higher evolved stuff, is in the higher cups that are resonating at a higher frequency as you go up. And then the not so bueno stuff is in the lower cups resonating at lower frequencies below us. Mm. And our goal is to move from our cup to the next cup up. And that's our goal, you know, spiritually, is to move from the cup we're in to the next cup up. And some of us, you know, kind of fall back to the cup below us, or maybe two or three cups below us, and have to work our way back up again. But in the grand scheme of the universe, that's tying the metaphysics back into the physics, is that these cups represent different levels of enlightenment, or different levels of positive or negative energy.
It's interesting how suddenly the scientific theory sounds more like, who, I don't know, a shaman? sounds a little bit more like your background. And that's really,
you
really
know,
interesting.
It all has to obey the laws of physics.
Mm-hmm.
Or we wouldn't experience it in the first place. And the trick is in figuring out which laws are applied and how they're applied. And that's what the research is about. And, you know, it's about cataloging it, finding out how it's working and where it fits in the grand scheme of stuff.
Absolutely. And, you know, one thing I've noticed myself in my own field research, will say, I did notice quite a few times when I've just been out capturing, you know, your usual run-of-the-mill rod of voice, okay? One thing I have noticed is a strange popping sound. Usually comes after it comes through. And
a pop?
Yeah, almost like a pop, almost like interference.
Yeah.
You know what it sounds like? The cracking of a whip, David.
You know what it is?
What's that?
What happens when a wormhole forms? A wormhole is kept stable by this stuff called exotic matter. And mm-hmm. exotic matter is simply matter with a negative mass. Well, when that matter comes into contact with our matter, it annihilates at a subatomic level, and it generates very powerful bursts of gamma radiation. That gamma radiation ionizes the air, and actually creates, get this, an orb. Hmm. What it actually creates is coal plasma. And this coal plasma is very high energy, room temperature plasma. It's very similar to like neon. It's cold, you know, it's not like, you know, 11,000 degrees. And it floats along and then grounds out. And when it grounds out, it's like 500,000 volts going to ground. Hmm. And when that happens, it's a slight arcing effect, and that's what you're hearing, is the crack of that arc going to ground.
Hmm.
Now, you don't see these things because they're manifesting in the ultraviolet spectrum.
Hmm.
But you can certainly feel them. Because one of the things that it does is it'll cause your hair to stand on end.
I was just going to say, oh, my God. So I got to interrupt you again, David. I just got to say, because I find this really fascinating, but I'm also a little bit concerned for most people who are out actually doing these paranormal investigations. There must be some kind of side effect.
Of course there are. Think of all the people that have died of cancer in the paranormal field recently.
Hmm.
More people and more people are out investigating every weekend, and they're being exposed to gamma radiation.
Hmm.
And if you think about the people that live in very active locations, they're sick all the time. Most of the people have health issues.
Hmm.
And it's related to this gamma radiation, you know, and it's not like it's a steady level. It's bursts, but it's like getting x-rays. It's like getting a snapshot of a gamma burst. It's like sitting in a dentist chair and getting like 35 or 40 x-rays over a course of an hour. And if you do that every weekend, it's accumulative.
Suddenly my four investigations a year sound like a better idea.
Well, we've told people to start wearing like radiation alert cards like x-ray techs wear at hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
Because it'll change color once you've been exposed to a too high a level of radiation. And if you can't afford a radiation data logger, these cards are like $30 or $35. And it will tell you it's time to take a break for a little while.
Yeah, really. And God, it's just so fascinating. And how fast we just ate up a half hour will let you know how awesome Dave Rountree is. We just destroyed it.
I'm telling you, man.
We practically held it down.
A half hour in no time.
I'm telling you, man. I feel like I'm not doing you justice here, but you know what? I have 12 guests a year, and I would love to talk to you again in 2016, buddy. Because this
has
just been awesome.
Do it again.
Absolutely. Now, before I let you go on, wow, I gotta like let my brain cool off for a second because it was on overdrive there for a little while. I gotta throw a shout out for David's books. His first book that came out, of course, Paranormal Technology, Understanding the Science of Ghost Hunting. His second new book, which came out this summer, Demon Street, USA, The True Story of a Very Haunted House. David, people can find this on Amazon.com and, of course, wherever good books are sold. You can also keep up with David Rountree's work and news at www.spininvestigations.com. That's spininvestigations.com.
Actually, it's .org.
Oh, .org, really?
.org, yeah. .com is actually for sale, I think.
Oh, okay, so, well.
I'm a poor man, though.
I'm a poor man. Yeah, I can imagine.
One domain is enough.
Yeah.
All my money goes into, like, you know, electronic components and parts and stuff, so.
I promised myself that I would do something that not enough people do. David, before I let you go, do you have any advice for anybody out there who truly does love the paranormal, who aren't in it for the money or the fame or the fortune, because God only knows there's none here in Newfoundland. Do you have any advice out there for them to help, just to help them make their investigations a little bit more professional, a little bit better, and just be safer overall? Have you got any advice at all?
Yeah, I would tell people to believe nothing anyone tells you. And prove it to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And think outside the box. And the second thing is buy a good handheld oscilloscope. That's probably the single best tool you'll ever have because you can plug so many different things into it and look at it. Instead of looking at a meter telling you numbers, you can actually look at the waveform. You can look at what it looks like electronically. And that's very important. And that's probably the three best pieces of advice I could give anybody.
I really appreciate your time tonight, David. Thanks so much for being on the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast.
Thanks for having me on, man. Anytime, you know, just get a hold of me. I'll be happy to come back.
Hopefully next time you won't be dying of demonic flu.
I know. I feel like I have the plague.
Okay. I'm gonna stop recording now. Take care, buddy.
All right.
Well, the time to say goodbye is upon us. But don't worry, you can keep track of the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast very easily. It's available on Stitcher, iTunes, Podbean, and TuneIn Radio. Just look for the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast banner. Of course, if you'd like to keep up to date, you can always check out the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast Facebook page. Drop a like, and every single time a new show goes up, you'll be notified. You can also follow me, John Mallard, on Twitter, at O-D-D-T-O-N-F-L-D. That's Odd to Newfoundland. Get your latest news on the podcast, as well as the ever-popular para-joke of the day. From the oldest city in North America, I bid you adieu. From the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast.